me just see how loud are you going to be.
Going mask owls?
Yes. So that's a male cackling. So only the males do that. And then... And that's the actual screech call.
And the point of playing these on a... The point of playing these on a megaphone...
It just gives them a bit more volume. Yes. So, yeah, the megaphones I actually got as part of a mechanism for trapping the owls, but it's just a handy way to actually broadcast it.
And then everything in the vicinity goes, help, there's a masked owl.
Possibly, yes. But the good thing is the masked owls, because they're so territorial, will respond to the call.
So they're going to say, who's in my patch?
That's right, and come and investigate. That's the owl that I found here a few nights ago. Very excited. I heard it call down there and I played the megaphone and it came to check me out. So very, very excited.
And who was more surprised, you or it?
Me, I think. Yes. So that's really exciting because masked owls in Tasmania are an endangered species. And the fact that there is an owl using this revegetation site is just, you know, a huge indication of how important this kind of stuff can be.
So birds, but also bats. I think I should be actually introducing you as the Batwoman this time.
Oh, you could do. I have been called that in the past.
Well, tell me about the bat work.
Okay. The bat work is very interesting because all the species of bats in Tasmania are forest dwelling, which is quite different from the rest of Australia where you get a lot of cave roosting bats as well. In Tasmania, even though we have caves, the bats don't use them. They all will roost in tree hollows or under bark or that kind of thing. So they're a lot more forest dependent and
smaller.
They are slightly smaller than you find elsewhere. The other good thing about Tasmania is there's quite a restricted number of species. So there's only 8 species that occur in Tasmania. Some of them like open areas and edges, and some of them prefer denser vegetation. So one of the things I'm looking at is in relation to patches of vegetation and just how the bats are using them. There's some work that's been done previously that indicates they can fly at least 5 kilometres. So I'm looking at whether or not the fragmentation that's occurred in agricultural landscapes is having an effect on how they're using the landscape, or whether it's actually benefiting them by providing more edge effects.
And how do you do that? What's the experimental design?
Basically, I'm looking at various patch. So I've got small, medium and large patch sizes, as well as planting areas that I'm looking at sort of as a separate category, because the project that I'm doing in partnership with Greening Australia is looking at how revegetation can be done to best effect for helping animals to come back and reuse habitat that's disappeared.
Can we have a look at the harp trap?
Absolutely, we can have a look at the harp trap. It's a tried and tested method for trapping bats. The difficulty with it is it's really designed to be set up in an enclosed space. So like a long track in a bush, the bats will use that as a flyway, and you can use it to sort of block part of that flyway. So it's no good for open fields, but in sort of patches like this where you can get spaces in the vegetation, it works really well.
And I can see why it's called a harp trap, all these thin, narrow strings set up. And
it's basically like 2 banks of piano wires that are set up. And because they're so fine, the bats can detect them, but they actually try and fly through them. And the actual banks are slightly offset. So they'll try and go through one and hit the one behind it. And then they just slide down into the catching bag at the bottom that has a couple of sleeves of plastic. And they just crawl up under there and then just sit there and wait for you to come and get them.
You're telling me it doesn't hurt at all?
It doesn't hurt at all.